Well, let's go ahead and get started. We have a packed agenda today, and some of the most interesting stuff's at the end, and some people are going to have to slip out early, so I hope to at least get to that before some people have to leave. But I want to start. Our first item is a review of the minutes from May 17th. Are there any comments to the minutes? And if not, I'll take the motion.
I so move.
It moved that we approve the minutes. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Okay, so before we jump into our regular agenda, are there any public... What's that? Oh, yeah, let's go ahead and do introductions as well. Why don't we go around the room? I'm moving too fast. I'm Salt Lake County Mayor Ben McAdams.
Good morning, Ted Knowlton, Wasatch Front Regional Council staff.
Redoing the University of Utah.
Jeff Scott, Wasatch County Commission.
Mike Daly, City Mayor.
Katie Jordan, Wasatch Front staff.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City Mayor.
Len Harvey, North Salt Lake Mayor.
Jeff Harris, Utah Department of Transportation.
Lauren Hansen, Utah Transit Authority.
Bill Summer by Salt Lake County, representing Utah Association of Counties.
Aaron Air Quality Board.
Danny McConnell, UDOT Commissioner.
Misha Christensen, UTA.
Ivan Marrero, Federal Highway Administration.
Wade Bittner, Tulare County Commission.
Tim Riding, West Jordan City Mayor.
Don Ramsey, South Jordan City Mayor.
John Barber, Morgan County Council.
Let's go here into the wings.
Ned Hacker with WFRC staff.
Roger Borgen, Utah Surveyor Transportation.
Heather McLaughlin-Cole, WFRC staff.
Wayne Bennett, also with staff. Russell Weeks, Salt Lake City Council staff.
Jim McNaughton, Murray City Development Services.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Jake Warner, Sandy City.
I'm Charlene McConkey, and I'm just the one for the ride.
Now she's long to crack the whip.
Yeah.
Bryn Morrison, Salt Lake Chamber and Housing Act Coalition. Holly New, WFRC staff.
Scott Hess, WFRC staff.
Ben Withrich, WFRC staff.
Dory Donner, WFRC staff.
Chrissy Dahlberg, WFRC staff.
Megan Townsend, WFRC staff.
All right, well, welcome everyone this morning. So before we jump into our regular agenda, we always love to hear from any members of the public who have any comments. So is there anyone at this time would like to comment on this? Sometimes I say that no comment is the best form of flattery. We're doing something wrong, they'd be here to comment. So happy to move on to the next agenda item then, seeing no comment. The chair report. So. I wanted to just comment, you know, RGC acts as a steering committee for the development of the Wasatch Choice for 2050 and the Regional Transportation Plan. So at the last meeting, we recommended the endorsement of the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision, and the council endorsed this vision with our recommendation. Jory, do you want to give us, where's Jory? There he is. Do you want to give us a brief update on the next update, update on the next steps in the four-year planning process?
Yeah, thank you.
We like finish a planning process and start the next one, so.
I'm already thinking 2023 plan, so yeah. I'm already 4 years ahead of myself right now.
Jory plans the next
right.
planning.
So we're 9 months away from adopting the regional transportation plan that we've been all working on. As the mayor mentioned, in May, the council, you made a recommendation and the council endorsed the regional vision. The next steps of that is to phase the plan. And so what that means is identifying, one, when those projects are needed and the land use, when we think they'll come on in 10-year phases. So the plan goes from 19 to 50. So the phases are 19 to 30, 31 to 40, 41 to 50. And so we've been working with UDOT and UTA staff. And we also went out to your planners and engineers at the technical advisory committees, not only for the regional growth committee, but for the TRANSCOM technical advisory committee, which the engineers attend. We reviewed the needs. So when are the projects needed in those 10-year blocks? And now our next step is to apply financial constraints. And so we work on a statewide financial model that we have Lewis Young, Roberts Birmingham helping us with. It's a coordinated effort with UDOT, UTA, and the other MPOs in the state. The plan is to identify now, we'll make an assumption of how much money we have, or we think we'll have with existing sources or reasonable new sources. And then we'll financially constrain the plan. And the idea is to bring that financially constrained plan back out to the local communities in workshops between the middle of October and the middle of November. So Katie's currently working on getting those scheduled. And so look for a save the date here in the next couple weeks for the workshops. We'll also have a public comment period during that time to financially constrain the plan, with the idea that we'll take your comments, do follow up, and then we also make sure we conform to air quality conformity, and then the plan would be adopted next spring in May. So any questions on the upcoming part of the planning process?
Good. Okay, thank you. All right, well, moving right along then, next item on the agenda is WFRC programs for communities. So the WFRC administers, as you probably all know, six programs that provide resources for local governments. The staff that leads these six programs is going to provide to us a quick presentation to describe each program so that you're aware of them and what resources they are. And I would encourage you to, you know, to listen carefully, take good notes. These are great programs that help our cities. You know, we are growing so fast, and the pressures of that growth that's overwhelming us in many ways. And these are resources that can help us think ahead and anticipate some of what we see coming at us and catch a little bit of our breath a little bit to plan for those things accordingly. So staff's going to walk us through these programs just so we're aware of them.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, before they start, if anybody would like a paper copy of the materials, I've got a few. If you don't have your digital copy with you today, just let me know and I can bring it around.
Thanks, Katie. Anyone? Just raise your hand and we'll pass those around.
I left my laptop in the car, so I can look at that.
They've all been challenged to keep it to 1 minute per program, so let's see if they can do it.
Tell them that.
But that doesn't include the 15 minutes of introduction, Ted, so. So the funding programs, thank you so much. I'm Scott Hess, Wasatch Front Regional Council. I'm the director of the Economic Development District, and we do have six programs, as the mayor announced. Wasatch Front Economic Development District's EDA funding, the Community Development Block Grant Program, which you'll hear from Christy Dahlberg, Transportation Land Use Connection Program, you'll hear from Megan Townsend, and then the three funding infrastructure programs, surface transportation, congestion mitigation, air quality, and transportation alternatives program, you're going to hear from Ben Luckridge today. All of our programs are competitive, either within the entire region or the planning program boundary, so keep that in mind as you think forward to the projects that you would submit. The first is the Economic Development District funding. This is funding that's delivered down through the Economic Development Administration, federal dollars that go into expanding employment, encouraging entrepreneurship, workforce training, and these are to help us to meet our mission of supporting economic development plans locally, promoting long-term economic competitiveness, and then of course attracting federal monies to implement local plans. So these are three different types of projects that have been applied for in our region, and there are three EDA programs that we're showing here. There's actually more EDA programs, so if you're interested in projects specific to expanding housing, workforce housing, or expanding economic opportunities within your communities, please speak to me. But this is the range. So you've got projects that begin in the low 100,000 range all the way up to $3 million for public works, economic, and economic assistance. So this might be expanding a water line in your community in order to open up a new job center. Regional innovation strategies, including entrepreneurial centers or cluster-based startups, and then local technical assistance. And this is the one, the local technical assistance is the one portion of the EDA grant that isn't tied to new job creation. And that can be economic development plans, feasibility studies, or impact analysis. So keep that in mind, that all of the other EDA grant funding, the requirement is that there's job creation on the other end of those federal monies going to your local community. So that's my 60 seconds on EDA. We're going to hear from Christy for the CDBG program.
Nicely done.
That's right.
All right, I better watch the second hand. All right, my name is Christy Dahlberg. I administer the Community Development Block Grant Small Cities Program through Wasatch Farm Regional Council. The Small Cities Program is designed for smaller cities, less populated counties in our region. The CDBG program is funded through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and administered through Utah Housing and Community Development Division under the Department of Workforce Services. The objective of CDBG is to assist in developing viable urban communities by providing decent housing and suitable living environments, principally for persons of low to moderate income. These are three projects that were funded last year through the CDBG program. In the coming year, we'll have, again, a little bit over $750,000 to appropriate. In this last funding cycle, the average grant amount was around $225,000. The minimum grant award that you're able to have is $30,000, and the maximum is $250,000, and that's for capital infrastructure projects, and then $200,000 for multi-year projects up to 2 years. So this is a list of the activities that are eligible through the CDBG program. We've funded things ranging from fire equipment to storage bays to infrastructure projects such as water and sewer lines, street, sidewalk, curb, and gutter projects, and public service providers such as domestic violence shelters, food banks, housing authorities, and homeless shelters. So there's a wide variety of projects that you can fund through CDBG. And then quickly, here's the timeline of kind of the funding cycle. So the How to Apply workshop is going to be coming up in October, and it is a mandatory attendance if you want to apply for CDBG funds. So keep your eye out for that if you're interested. And if you have any other questions about project eligibility or anything like that, I'm happy to answer any questions for you. Ned, do you have a question?
Christy, can you tell us which cities, counties are eligible for these particular funds versus cities and counties that have their own CDBG programs?
Yes, absolutely. Good question. So Morgan, Tooele, and Weber counties are eligible through the Small Cities Program through Wasatch Front Regional Council, excluding entitlement cities such as Davis County. Ogden City. Sorry about that. All right, and then up next to talk about the Transportation Land Use Connections Program is Megan Townsend.
Thanks. So yeah, I'm Megan Townsend. I manage our TLC program. The Transportation and Land Use Connection Program is a partnership with UDOT, UTA, and Salt Lake County. Our partners contribute both funding and they contribute to the success of projects. We're really lucky to have our partners. TLC supports local governments in their planning efforts implementing the Wasatch Choice Vision. So planning projects that connect land use and transportation thinking, most of which are eligible under the program. We have $1.3 million in funding. Oh my gosh, yes, $1.3 million annual funding. I said billion. I wish. One day. The goals of the program are to maximize the value of investment in public infrastructure, enhance access to opportunity, increase travel options to optimize mobility, and create communities to live, work, and play. Over the course of projects, we've had 93% move into the next phase toward implementation, and we want to continue to help these projects move that direction. This is a list of project types. Generally, if a project meets the program goals, it's eligible. I'm happy to talk with you and your staff about your project ideas. As with this program and the next three you'll hear about, letters of intent are due in October. So prior to then, let's chat through any project ideas you might have. The website is a really great resource, as well as what you should have in front of you. And for those of you on the outer ring, we have more of these. This is the report card, and there's a lot of information in here as well. Thanks. Ben Withrich, taking us home.
So the last three programs that are available as a resource to local governments are the Surface Transportation Program, or the STP funds, Congestion Mitigation Air Quality, or the CMAQ funds, and the Transportation Alternatives Program, or the TAP funds. The STP program is probably the most flexible out of all of these funds, and it comes with the largest amount of funds available. These funds generally, we're estimating about $20 million available in the Salt Lake urban area, and about $10.7 available in the Ogden-Layton urban area. These funds are available for all projects on a federal aid eligible road. That means the facility needs to be identified as a collector or grader. The types of these facilities, if it's on the Well, they're eligible for new construction or widening if that project has been identified in the first phase of the regional transportation plan. It's also, they're used for the reconstruction, bridge enhancement or improvements, as well as reduced traffic demand type projects or intersection improvements. A good example of a great STP project took place on 5600 West. You can see what the older facility looked like. It was a two-lane section of road. In some areas, they had curb, gutter, and sidewalk on one location, and the cross-section wasn't uniform throughout the limits of the project. However, after completion, we had a beautiful five-lane facility with bike lanes, shoulders, curb gutters, and sidewalks on both sides, addressing not only the vehicle traffic, but alternative traffic as well, or alternative transportation. The next type of funding is the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Funds. Now, these funds have a little more limiting factor. These types of projects need to be for projects that'll enhance or improve air quality. These types of projects would include transportation facilities, maybe commuter type bike or ped facilities, ITS, that's your intelligent transportation system improvements, and also projects that will reduce traffic demand like your van pools, your ride share. Here's some pictures of some various eligible type projects for these. There's about 5.2 million available in the Salt Lake area and about 3 million available in the Ogden-Layton urban area. The last type of funds is Transportation Alternative Program Funds. These funds are for projects that would relate to non-motorized type improvements. This is for also planning and design for these, for both pedestrian and bicycle. Including our types of projects would include sidewalks, bicycle infrastructure, traffic calming technologies, lighting and safety, etc. Safe routes to school type projects are also eligible for these funds. One particular project to highlight here, as many of you are familiar with the event of the Golden Spoke, and that's the DNRG Rail Trail. This particular project, you can see the before and the after types projects. Beautiful facility, not only for recreational use, but also for transit or commuter related type use. This program has about 900,000 available in the Salt Lake urban area and about 500,000 available in the Ogden-Layton urban area. So where we are then with the process is we're here in August and we're kind of promoting or...
Can I just clarify, you're talking about all of the programs except for the small city CDBG. Everyone that has been spoken about so far, right? With this timeline?
Correct, yes. Thanks, Dan. So having said that then, where we are here in August is that to introduce or to make you aware of these resources that are available for you. The latter part of September, we'll be sending out a packet requesting letters of intent. That's a brief letter that identifies the project, not necessarily the types of funds. Staff can do that, or staff can work with your staff to help you identify what type of funds might be eligible for your project. The objectives of the project and the estimated project cost. Then in the latter part of October, we'll request that concept reports be submitted by those eligible projects. Those applications will be due in January, and then in the spring of 2019, we'll begin our evaluation, and in some programs, we'll make recommendations. So that would be all of the programs or the resources available for the local governments. Any questions?
Can you tell me again how much you said was available for Salt Lake County in the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Funds?
About 5.3 million.
A question for Macon, Ben, if we could go back. When you said that a high percentage of the projects, the TLC projects, have moved on to implementation, what did you mean by that?
So that's a measurement. We're starting to try and look at some now that it's been 5 years. We've funded 65 projects. We're looking more into, you know, how they're doing, where are these at? Because we fund such a wide variety of projects, they might be visioning, they might be studying, or they might be writing an ordinance or working with the development community, property owners. We're just trying to look at, as far as the next step, if it was a vision, is then have they moved toward working on a plan to put that into action? If it was a plan, have they moved toward working on an ordinance? So whatever, wherever, we want to meet you where you are, wherever your community is. So we're happy to meet you at the early stages. We just want to keep working with you to get toward implementation. So it's kind of vague what implementation means.
Thank you.
Ultimately toward building stuff on the ground that improves our region, right?
I think that exact point gets to why we're so interested in this and why we agreed to fund it, is that we see this as that implementation step between Wasatch Choice for 2050, you know, the high level vision, and actually implementing it at the ground level. And it's really exciting, and I think we have the right performance metrics, and we are holding ourselves accountable in terms of really putting stuff on the ground that makes a difference, gets into codes, ordinances, general plans, et cetera, et cetera.
One more thing on that. It can be whatever the city's doing, if they've moved on and they don't need our help anymore, as long as they're implementing. But most of that is actually another round coming to TLC and saying, you know what we need next. Let's get another project going. So we're happy that we're a part of that most of the time. Yeah.
And you're way over a minute, man.
Yeah, I got three, though.
Oh, okay.
He gets 3 minutes.
All right, well, thank you, and thanks for helping us with these resources. If you have further questions on that, please just reach out to staff directly. These are some great programs. Moving on to the next item on our agenda is the Economic Development and Land Use and Transportation Programming with SB 136. So last year, as you all know, SB 136, the Transportation Governance Amendments, was passed. Did so many different things. But in addition to authorizing funding for transit and local needs, SB 136 enhances the coordination of transportation, land use, and economic development. So this is really, I think, groundbreaking legislation. So today, UDOT, WFRC, and Salt Lake County are going to discuss how these kinds of considerations are being explored in ways that our transportation funds are programmed. One element being discussed in each of these cases to highlight is access to opportunity, something that we've done a lot of work on here to develop that concept, and I was so happy to see it reflected in the legislation and based on a lot of the good work that we've done. So with that, we'll turn it over to Jeff with UDOT, who will start, and who will be joined by Wayne Banyan from WFRC and Wilf Summercorn from Salt Lake County.
Thank you, and I too am feeling the pressure. I have a lot of slides, and I said 10 minutes, and Ted said 8, so 20. And no, I'll try to get done very quickly. But this is an important topic, right? And one of the things is we were going through it at the state. Senate Bill 136 really did require prioritization methods at the state level, regional level, and the local level. And one of the concerns was, right, they each can be differently because the context is different, but they can't be diametrically opposed to one another. So this discussion and getting everybody's involvement, I think, is very important. So we are just kicking off on the capacity prioritization model for, and just to be clear, it is owned and by the Transportation Commission, not necessarily staff. We're assisting the commission in developing kind of what we call our prioritization 2.0 model. And if you recall, just very quickly, we're really prioritizing TIF dollars, Transportation Investment Fund dollars. Those are state sales tax dollars, and they're primarily for road. Although in Senate Bill 136, they created the TTIF, which is the Transit TIF program, but they developed a separate fund for that. And we'll get into the specifics of that in just a minute. So kind of the principles of our process is be transparent, set expectations from the beginning, directly involve our partners, and we did that a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to show you some of the results of that. There's going to be multiple opportunities. The schedule is very quick, but there'll be multiple opportunities for feedback, educate and inform stakeholders, and build confidence and buy-in in the system. There we go. And this come out of Senate Bill 136. I'm not going to go into the details of Senate Bill 136, but here's what we're trying to do. It's outcome focused rather than problem focused. Right now, it's all built around congestion and volumes. It's very difficult to get your project to rise to the top unless you have severe congestion and severe volumes. That's a very narrow look at transportation projects and prioritizing. We want a more comprehensive look at that that looks at it through many different contextual lenses. The ability to assess regional and statewide economic development and outcomes, land use plans. One of the challenges with the last system was it wasn't as transparent and understandable as we'd have liked. There was a component that allowed the commission to take non-quantitative metrics into consideration. We didn't do a good job of helping the commission articulate what some of those were. And when you saw a score of 65 versus 67 and 65 went first, people were going, why? And when materially there really wasn't any difference between those projects. So that's a big deal. And then at the very bottom, the ability to compare across to assets and modes. I will say that is a very tall order. There isn't a prioritization model in the country that's doing that effectively right now. But that is our goal, and we are working toward that. The legislature kind of gave us a pass, if you will, at least at the forefront, because they created two different funds, so we can create two different models, and we'll get into the schedule of those. Highway and transit. Our focus right now is on roadway, but we invited our transit partners to the table on our kickoff. Again, there are differences, but we want to align the processes. We're going to develop them in parallel. We hope to stand up our roadway model this fall and use it for the next step cycle with the commission in the spring. We'll probably be developing the transit model in detail this winter and probably have it ready next fall. And then we'll work toward the actual combining of those two processes. So, real big questions, and then I'll start moving along. This is what we ask. We want to take a giant step backwards and say, you know, just ask some very fundamental questions. Why are we investing in transportation? What are we trying to accomplish, right? As a region, quality of life, economic vitality come to mind. What's important in those things that we're trying to affect? And then how do we actually get to evaluating it? So these are the questions that we pose to our partners. We invited all of our MPO partners, our transit agency, to a day-long, we called it a design sprint workshop, a week ago Monday, I believe. And actually the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. So those are the questions that we started with. It was kind of, again, very design sprint, design thinking exercise. We were moving the entire day. As you can see, we generated a ton of ideas. And then what we were tasked to do is break those ideas down and put some logic around them. Just kind of a word cloud of all of the words and ideas that came out of this. And as you can see, access to opportunity was one of those central themes that came out of the discussion. And you can use access to opportunity, that's the interesting thing. We say opportunity, but there are so many ways to use accessibility, if you will, both economically, both on the land use side. So it is a very powerful concept. Let's go. So some of the themes that came out of the why, we did a little spider diagram, and you can see what kind of key themes came out of this. Fiscal responsibility, economic vitality, access to opportunity, quality of life, and mobility were the key themes. Then what we tried to do, and this is a lot of stuff, we said, okay, we've got the why, we've got the what, now what connects those two? And so basically what we're doing here is taking a deep dive into accessibility. These are all of the topics that connect the why and the what together. It's a lot of information, I know. Then we said, how do we connect the how, what, or excuse me, the why, the what, and the how, actually how you do it. This is where you start getting into kind of measures and metrics. And again, it's only for one of those key areas. This is another way to look at the why, the what, and the how. Considerations, and you'll see here that accessibility was one of those considerations. We had a lot of discussion about it. We actually took it out as one of the considerations, primary organizing thoughts. And the reason why we took it out is because it's so overarching and it is so much a part of each one of the other considerations. The what is the criteria and the how are the calculations. So this is kind of where we ended up. And basically what you're looking at is, again, here's the why, right? Why are we doing what we're doing relative to transportation, both on the transit side and the roadway side? Here is the what's important,
right, in each one of those elements. And then as we break down, here are kind of the metrics or measures that we want to get into. So that's where we basically arrived at last Monday. And this kind of sets the framework of how we're going to move forward on a prioritization model and what's important as we prioritize projects in the future. As you can see, this is much different than just transportation, just volumes, and just congestion. We're looking at a broad range of factors now as we move forward. So kind of just a little visual on how this could actually look in a model. And don't worry, this is just for fun. But if you've got those four key whys there, here's our criteria: access to opportunity, business costs. Here's the calculations that go within that. And then ultimately, here's how you prioritize projects that come out of that. Again, only using one of those areas. But this is where we're going. I think, Ted, I think the partners were pretty much in agreement with this process and gave it a nod and said, yes, we're going down the right path. I presented this then to my executive leadership team, and they said, yes, we're going down the right path. We're going to engage our Transportation Commission at the September 1 and say, does this make sense from your perspective? And start doing some weighting processes as well. Next steps, further develop the measures and methods. Next week, our consultant team is coming back. We're going to re-engage the technical staffs of our partners and just say, really, what data is available? What does it tell us? Can we really calculate something? And what is the level of effort? You know, cost-benefit analyses, for example, are very, very difficult and expensive, and you can't do a true cost-benefit analysis on 400 or 500 unified plan projects. So there are certain things that we have to set expectations for. We'll follow up in early fall with our partners again and show them where we are. This is kind of the schedule. Process design, you can see where we are in August, September. We're really focusing on the highway model now, even though we engaged our transit projects. Laura's staff was there. We're really going to take a deep dive into the transit component, which we'll look at TTIF early this next year. Stand up the highway model this fall, transit. Actually, we're standing it up early next spring. Then we'll start trying to combine the two. Ted, how am I doing on time? I'm done. Perfect. Did I fall within 8 minutes? Awesome. That was probably way too fast. And there's a lot of information here. But we'll continue to come back and show you where we are. I guess the message that I would give is we do want to engage all of our partners. At some point, we're going to visit the leagues, League of Cities and Towns, UAC, others. Our friends at the university, others, and just say, how does this look? Are we going in the right direction? We want to get buy-in at the end of the day. The process is owned by the commission, but I think buy-in from our partners is absolutely necessary, and I think we are committed to looking at prioritizing projects from a much broader perspective than just congestion and volumes.
Any discussion to this or questions?
Yes.
In your why, there was a, in one of the slides, there was a, one of the bullet points was return on investment. Let's go back one.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
So can you explain that to me in UDOT's sphere?
I think
if you take it down to here and you combine it with
cost benefit, actually, where I, that's not where I wanted to go. I wanted to take it right here in terms of opportunity cost, right? Opportunity cost is a basically an economic term, and it's used to evaluate if I got an investment here and I have an investment here. If I invest in A rather than B, I am giving up the opportunity of investment B. That is a real cost. And so when we say life cycle costs, what we're looking at is what is the true cost of this project, not just the nominal cost to construct it, but to operate it, maintain it, and reconstruct it, and have a very clear picture of what that is. That way we can start saying, okay, here's the benefit, here's what the cost is, here's our return, rather than just, again, looking at the cost, $2 billion to build it today. Then what we can do, I think, and this is where you start to be able to compare the transit and the roadway, is start saying,
If we have different, and it's not going to be project-based in the future, it's really going to be a set of solutions that include multimodal. It'll be transit, it'll be roadway, there'll be policy measures. And what we tried to do with Wasatch Front Central Corridor study is say, here's three different investment strategies. We're not going to tell you what's the most important. We're going to give you all of the data so that our policymakers can make educated trade-offs. If you want to develop car-centric, great. We'll go down that path. But here's the cost, and here's the reality of what that means, both in terms of life cycle costs, congestion, et cetera, land uses. If you want a more transit-centric, great, perfect. We'll go down that path. But and here are the trade-offs of that. The public and you at the city level need to make these decisions, right? Not us at the state level. You're our customers, and we want to deliver what you want. But we have to be able to, and our job is to demonstrate the true trade-offs of those various investment options. So that's really what we're talking about. Mayor?
Go ahead. Oh, I was just going to thank UDOT for including us in this collaborative, really inclusive process. We know you don't have to, but we really appreciate the collaborative nature of this, and I really like the direction it's going.
I mean, I'll continue on that point just to say that not many Department of Transportations around the country do that, so we're really lucky to have that vision here. My question was going to be, how dynamic could the tool be? I mean, I'm thinking of this as an equation, and it's the transportation land use connection, and at Salt Lake County we have our Department of Transportation, Housing, and Economic Development that are all kind of three variables in the same equation. How dynamic is the tool such that you would be able to look at, I mean, if you're assessing transportation in the world of access to opportunity, could you extrapolate from that tool and say, oh, we're going to, you know, that from that, you may look at that tool and say, we need an economic development incentive in this area. I would love to, from the county level, to know that we should focus tax increment or other efforts in an area based on that same analysis that we could expand economic development, or in other parts, it may be housing, you know, right. Or.
Exactly. And so, you know, for example, how do you actually, you know, there's a lot of debate on economic impact analysis versus cost benefit analysis, and can I tie a transportation improvement to actual long-term job growth? Short-term job growth, sure, I can measure that. Long-term is difficult, but what we can measure, perhaps, is are we connecting mega development sites or industry clusters, those type of things, yes. So. We haven't got there yet, Mayor, but I think that's what we're trying to do. The other thing that we're really trying to do is balance the complexity. You know, the more complex, or the more options you put into it, the more complex it is. And so we're really trying to balance this. The other thing that I would say is it's probably not a one and done. We're not going to do this and be done with it. It's going to be a continual evolution. We're going to learn each year and continue developing this in terms of its level of sophistication. That was probably a very poor answer to your question.
Jeff, you know,
yes, sir.
From years sitting on this committee with me, my main concern with capacity projects is induced development.
Induced demand.
Sprawl, right. Induced demand. Actually, I don't worry so much about induced traffic as I do about urban sprawl that can be exacerbated by highway projects, capacity projects. Where does that fit into the schema of yours?
It's a good question, and again, I would, you know, come back and argue commuter rail, for example, does essentially the same thing, right? Because it encourages people to move farther away from the city centers. Yes, it's building them closer to the station, but it does induce people can live further away and consume more land.
Sure, any major transportation.
Absolutely. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is not be an advocate for a particular outcome in terms of land use. It's not the role of the state of Utah to tell South Jordan how to develop, right? And so one of the questions that we're having here is, and it was a really great dialogue, should we be agnostic? I mean, one of the things that we're trying to do, and I think what the Senate was concerned, the legislature was concerned about, if we have land use plans, okay, you as mayors, county commissioners, et cetera, county councils, you agree to Wasatch Choice for 2050, okay? There should be accountability behind that. Through corridor area planning, you agree to a land use plan there should be accountability for that. Because we're going to develop a transportation system that supports that. It's when that changes that you get delta or differences in cost in what type of transportation system needs to support that. Should I support single family detached residential development? Or should we just give more points to transit-oriented development? We had a robust discussion about that. And from an agnostic perspective, it's not my business to tell local government, as long as they're being consistent in their planning and the transportation plans. The other side of the equation is, should the state subsidize unsustainable or less sustainable land use patterns? That's a really good question.
Yeah.
And I was surprised at some of the responses from some of the areas. That's a really, and that's a question that we want to have. Should it? I don't think there's any question that single family detached consumption of land is a less sustainable land use pattern than compact development. I don't think there's any question. Should the state subsidize that? I think is a legitimate question.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, could I?
Yeah, please.
Am I? See, I told you I was going to get at least 20.
I think these are very interesting and important questions. This conversation is really about what's the structure behind how we make funding decisions,
right,
and prioritizing projects as a state. And I just wanted to provide a little bit of additional context that we're all familiar with Utah's Unified Transportation Plan. Most WFRC staffers have a little tattoo of the cover of that on their shoulder. Every MPO, including Wasatch Front Regional Council and UDOT for rural Utah, develops a long-range plan. And Jory talked about this. That plan then is phased into 10-year buckets. And essentially what we're talking about here is, once something is within phase one, the first phase,
correct,
so there's this link between planning, and then within that first phase, how does the state then
prioritize, yeah,
prioritize across all of those projects statewide, and what are the decisions that they make? And so I just wanted to note that link, I think part of the reason of bringing this topic forward is that this is a pretty significant shift in how decisions are made, and it's being explored statewide. And it's being explored, and Jeff got at this, to take a step back and ask the question, ultimately, how does transportation improve or affect quality of life? And to including economic vitality and the like. And so it's a pretty significant paradigm shift. It's an overused term, but it really is called for here. And we all thought that it would be important for you as a committee to be aware of this, but it does start to get into some of these very interesting questions that Jeff is getting at. And I would just add that the notion here is that local governments always control land use. Land use in turn affects mobility, it affects congestion, it affects ridership, it affects how many destinations people can get to. And should land use then be part of this equation to understand how well functioning a transportation project might be? And those are the things that we're trying to unpack. I guess I would just add one more thing, that this is a, and help me out with this, Jeff, but this is a decision support tool. So this doesn't determine priorities. This is information that decision makers, the Transportation Commission, uses to help them make those priorities. It doesn't tell them what to do.
There's no easy button. We don't push a button and we get an answer. There is room in this process for the discretion of the commission, absolutely. And it will, just your point is well taken, and it was lost. It was lost in our workshop too, that the planning process has already taken place, right? And both the roadway portion and the transit portion and the overall support for the Wasatch 2050 land use plan has been made. This is a programming tool, and it needs to be in alignment with that process, and that's what we're doing now.
Real quickly, go ahead.
I just had my turn. I mean, what I see is that the cities we decide land use, and then after the land use is decided and we build out, then the state gets to bear the cost of trying to take care of our problems and improve, which is what you're saying. Is this going to be a tool where we can go and look at the master plans that we have out there in the various areas and say, this is your land use, this is the cost that the state's going to bear, and somehow get people talking about saying, is the land use really, everybody has to pay for these land use decisions, even though it's the localities that say they're the ones who make the decisions.
Right.
But we need to get improved with the conversation.
And that's where I think Wasatch Choice for 2050 is a great mechanism, the TLC program. That's why we're so vested in the TLC program. It kind of is that you operationalize it and get it down to the municipal level, and then concepts like opportunity costs, I think we should do that. I mean, you could argue that West Davis Corridor, it's negative externalities, right? And again, not a value judgment, but West Davis developed the way it did, and they made that decision, but now we need to build a freeway out there, and that cost of that freeway is being borne by all the residents of the state of Utah, not the people whose decisions drove it. Now, that's harsh, perhaps, but that's what you're talking about right there. And that's where we need to start having those conversations above the table. Negative externalities are real, and they're driving our cost structure.
Right. So I'm very glad that you're doing this. It's going to make it a lot easier to vote for capacity projects because we will have metrics associated with them.
That's really my goal, Professor Ewing, is to make it easier for you, Dr.
Yeah, well, all of us collectively vote for them. But I just wonder if you couldn't add under economy something that there might be some metric that relates to inducing urban sprawl.
It's a great idea. Commissioner Bittner.
I wonder where we should put new technologies in this plan. I saw my first flying car this last weekend, and it works. We've got drone technology that's coming in. You know, we've got self-driving vehicles and things like that. Would that be an appropriate study to get involved in? Because whether we like it or not, they're going to be adopted. And we said the same thing about Uber. And now everybody uses that. And so, how do we put those in this plan?
That's a really good question, and I think from a planning process perspective, we're just getting our arms around it right now. I think we can model the capacity implications and benefits from connected and autonomous vehicles. We can predict that. The challenge is predicting the travel demand side. Some of the preliminary numbers we're seeing and preliminary indications are that BMT could grow dramatically. It's grown in New York, where they actually have access to Uber and Lyft data, and it's grown dramatically.
I would suggest one other part then. Maybe we need to consider airspace conveyance.
I could.
I'll follow the road. You're delivering packages, do you have to stay on the roads? Can you go cross country? I mean, that could be a mess if people don't totally understand it in the future.
You're right, and it's kind of Jetson-like, but there are actual working prototypes now developed by some of the top engineering companies where they actually, you will buy the pod where you sit, you will rent the turbofan that comes in and takes you up by air, and then you will rent the wheel set when you land. And there are working models of this. And we have, it's horse and buggy to cars, the change that's coming. One step at a time, Commissioner. Yes, we are trying to figure out how to plan for it, and then we'll figure out how to prioritize for it. But yes, it's coming, and it's the talk of our industry. And yeah, we're dialed into it. Has this captured that? No, it has not. And that's why it needs to evolve.
I've been waiting for 25 years to say roads, where we're going, we don't need roads.
That's exactly right. Star Trek, thank you, sir.
I wonder if I could ask a question, because I think it's maybe the elephant in the room. I can see where transportation improvements drives sprawl. other development becomes and creates other issues. But from the city's perspective, one of the things that we battle are personal property rights and decisions made by property owners, and that's what's driving all of this.
Agreed.
How do you put brakes on someone's right?
Agreed, right? Those are the, that's, do I be, am I, do I influence you or do I accommodate you? You're my customer, right? And it's difficult for the state to make that decision. Those are the things we're grappling with.
And you're in the same situation we are with property owners.
Yeah.
Because do we really have a right to squelch your property right?
And if I can just add tax structure on top of this, which is really driving a lot, I think personally, this is Jeff, not UDOT, but you know, the tax structure is driving a lot of the behaviors. It's, you get the behaviors you incentivize. You want the government to know better than I do.
I want to make sure we have time for the last item on the agenda. And this, I just stopped if we could discuss forever, I'd love to, but why don't we make sure we keep going. And Wayne Banyan with WFRC also had some to add to this topic, and Jeff will stay close. I think we'll probably want to continue the conversation, but Wayne and Will.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief and keep comments at a pretty high level. Just want to let you know or remind you that WFRC is responsible, as you heard earlier in this meeting, for a pretty small portion of money or amount of money. And the projects typically are much smaller in scope and in cost than the projects that are programmed through the Transportation Investment Fund. But we have been over the past year or so looking concurrently while this group has been talking about incorporating access to opportunity and economic development into the planning, long-range planning process. We've also been looking at how do we address these issues better or better incorporate access to opportunity in our programming and in particular of our service transportation programs that Ben Withrich mentioned earlier. So basically we've been looking at a few different concepts, diversity of destinations, level of number of jobs, proximity or improving access to jobs, and also improving access to and from households. And I'll just give you one example. This is a map of level of jobs, number of jobs within a radius of individual points throughout the region. This is Weber and Davis counties. The next slide is Salt Lake County. And in our technical process for STP, this, we're looking at the idea of, and in fact, Transcom will discuss this more this afternoon, looking at the idea of including an increased consideration of access to opportunity through jobs, households, diversity of destinations, in addition to the several other criteria that we currently look at within the STP program, such as safety, management of the facility or proactive management of the facility, cost effectiveness, and several others. So that's very quick.
Wayne, if you don't mind me just adding briefly, those maps show current conditions. There are communities that are growing rapidly, and we're also allowing for, hey, if you're growing and your actions are gonna change that map, then you can build that into the criteria as well.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate that clarification.
If I can just add, UTA is using a very similar methodology in planning their future bus service and bus service goes as well. So we're looking at this access to opportunity, how do we connect people to education and jobs, and so I think it's great that we're all sort of using the same methods.
And with that, I would add, and you're going to hear this more from Will, but Salt Lake County is also looking to, to use the same methodology for the transportation funds of their program, but also as we look at housing and jobs initiatives, we want to make sure that we're acting in a way that balances, you know, creates equilibrium, not further throws things out. Not at home.
That's all I've got. Thank you.
Well, I'll be brief as well. The reason Salt Lake County is into this and working on these criteria or on this prioritization process is because SB 136 required that for some of our transportation funding that we receive through either the state legislature directly or through authorization for certain tax funding by the legislature, that Salt Lake County must now develop criteria and adopt them by ordinance. Specifically, that relates to what's called the County of First Class Highway Fund, which was a special fund that was set up several years ago in order to use some of the authorized sales tax and other funding sources that the legislature had authorized at the local level, but to be used for some specific project, most notably like the Mountain View Corridor, but some other projects as well. That fund is still in existence and receives money from primarily the third quarter sales tax that was authorized some time ago, and so a couple of other funding sources, and then also fairly regularly from direct appropriation by the legislature. And that has generated some discussion. Mayor?
I want to chime in there and put that a little bit less politically correct.
Sure, thank you.
just for, because I know this has been a topic that's come up, I've seen it numerous times where, you know, new elected officials come in and they see the legislature appropriating funding for a transportation project in Salt Lake County, and they'll say, why is Salt Lake County getting this funding and we're not? Well, the background is, so it's our third quarter and some vehicle registration fees that are all locally imposed taxes that the House of Representatives, it's going to be probably 12 to 14 years ago, I think, came in and said, in Salt Lake County, we're going to take these local funds and we're actually going to put the responsibility on the legislature for allocating these funds. And so that none of you other counties who have these revenues, who have imposed them, you get to decide how to spend your own revenues. But Salt Lake County had the special privilege of getting the help from the legislature to decide how our dollars get spent. So that's when you see the legislature put, you know, money for this or for that. It's actually our dollars that they hijacked. I'm going to say hijacked because nobody who did that is currently in the legislature, so I'm not going to step on any toes. But who hijacked this revenues and told us how to spend it. So it's been a bit of a burr in our saddle. When I got elected, I said, you know, we weren't happy about it, but I said, you can only fight so many battles. We're going to just, it is what it is, and go with that. Over the last couple of years, we've been pushing, and the mayors in Salt Lake County and myself pushed to get some more local control over those funds. And what we got was a bit of a hybrid. They gave back decision-making over these funds back to Salt Lake County with a process that they're imposing over that. Now, I went along with it. I supported that because I think we intended to do a sort of a process anyway, and what ultimately came out for these funds was a bit of a compromise with the legislature. We don't love the fact that we are the only county that isn't able to administer our funds as we see fit. We have a state law that directs how our third quarter and vehicle registration funds are spent. No other county does, but there's history, and that's how we got to where we are. And that's as it relates to, it's called this County of the First Class Highway Transportation Fund, not to be confused with the fourth quarter, which was also called Prop 1, which is a different revenue source that does not have those strings attached to it. And so we're looking to, now we've got two processes for not a lot of funds, and how do we streamline this? And we don't want to take everybody who's outside of Salt Lake County's time to get into the details of how these different funds are going to be administered and what we're trying to do to streamline it so that our cities aren't confused. But we're going to maybe share just some high and overarching ideas about our thoughts on how we're going to program these funds.
Correct. You know, I'm really glad the mayor was here and that he could address this directly, because I thought a lot of the things that he said, but I can't say them. He can, and so I'm really glad he was here to be able to say those. So now you know the real history or the background of this. So SB 136 does require, though, that Salt Lake County do a couple of things with that county with the first class highway fund. One is that we have to establish an advisory committee that will recommend for the use of those funds. And we're in the process of doing that now. We'll be discussing that with our COG at our next meeting. The mayor and the council have been discussing that as well. The second thing that it requires is that we have to, Salt Lake County has to, by ordinance, adopt a prioritization process with criteria. So that's what we have been working on, and we're in the early stages of that. And some of the slides that are up here will show you some of our early thinking about that. We're nowhere to the point of being finalized on these because we're still in discussion. We'll be discussing this with the council next week. We also felt like that this is something that when we get that advisory board appointed, we need to discuss it with them as well. So this is nowhere near being to the point of being finalized. And also, we're not nearly as sophisticated as the process that Jeff has pointed out. And I think we would like to use some of your thinking to go into the process of what we're looking at as well.
I was thinking I wanted to use some of yours, but yes, let's
share. Oh, great. Well, we can share. That will be excellent. But one of the things, and I've only put a couple of the criteria that we are thinking about up here, the ones that relate to some extent to access to opportunity, which is something that, Ted had indicated that's what we want to talk about primarily here. So in the past, when you look at or you think about criteria that may be used for prioritizing how you're going to use your limited amount of money on what projects, oftentimes the things that you look at are primarily things that have to do with congestion mitigation. How congested is the road and how much does it need to be widened to relieve that congestion? Professor Ewing hits on this all the time. And, we agree with them, you really can't build your way out of this, and what we really need to be looking at. We kind of look at that as being treating the symptoms, not the disease. You're really looking at, how do we alleviate the pressure, but what's causing the pressure, and how do you deal with that? And so we feel like this access to opportunity, among other criteria, is a way to do that. So what we are trying to look at are criteria that we'll look at, what's the proximity of jobs to where the people live? And what do you need to do to connect them a little better, but get the most bang for the buck in order to do that? And maybe what that may mean sometimes is that you're not necessarily going to be spending so much money building new transportation projects as encouraging strategies that will encourage jobs to locate near where the people live, or vice versa. And that will help believe that will accomplish the same thing probably in a better way. So we're working through the various criteria now to look at how we might be able to do that. I could talk about some more things, but we're limited on time. I'll leave it at that. I'll just say that's what we're looking at, is those kinds of criteria. And we think that that's something that can serve as an example. As the mayor mentioned, all of you have some discretionary funding that you have as well that you use at the local level. We would encourage you to look at doing something similar. And the mayor also mentioned this is also being required that we do for the highway of the first class, or county of the first class highway fund. But we are discussing using this for all of our transportation funding potentially in the future as well. We'll just work it through for this, what we're required to do, and then take a look at it.
Great. Any further discussion?
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, well, let's move on then to the last item on the agenda. And that is, I guess not the last, but the next item on the agenda. So it's Utah's housing affordability gap and Wasatch choice for 2050. I think it appropriately fits into this conversation, as we've talked about a transportation and land use connection, to not forget the housing component of it. That is part of, I think, the equation, part of the effort to seek equilibrium it's not only connecting people to jobs, but connecting jobs to people, and that you got to talk about the housing side of the equation as well. So we're all experiencing these challenges in our community. So today we're going to discuss this issue as a group and get at a few questions. The questions are kind of, we want to hear what you're experiencing in your community with regard to population growth and affordability issues, and what information would help you and your community's residents as you discuss growth and affordability. So with that, why don't we turn the time over to seat the conversation. We're going to have two brief conversations, first from Ted Knowlton with WFRC staff, and then Abby Osborne representing the Housing Gap Coalition. Ted.
Thank you, Mayor. Good morning, everybody. I have been stressing
brevity in PowerPoints because I'm sympathetic to how many meetings that you all attend, and I'm sure that you get a lot of presentations. And this agenda item is really focused on discussion, and so I will aim to be brief myself. But we know that this is a key issue. It's in the media, it's being talked about in your communities, and it feels different, don't you think? The conversation about housing feels different than it did 5 or 10 years ago. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely.
I want to make two quick points. One is that for a variety of reasons, I think that our housing challenges that we're feeling now are the start of a new normal, and I'll briefly talk about that. And I'll just reiterate a point that the mayor just made, which is that I think this should not just be a conversation about how much lower cost forms of housing are built, but also where they are built. Brief thing. I think growth is feeling different now. Here's a few things about it. We're seeing rapid price increases. We know this. You might be interested to note, I've never had a steady hand, that our housing types that we're building are shifting. A 20% shift in the type of housing that we are building is a really significant shift. So across the Wasatch Front, 5 years ago, if you just looked at building permits, 2/3 of our housing was single family, and now it's less than 50%. So it's a 20% drop in 5 years. That's part of what we're feeling. And I think the third thing that I would just note that's why it's feeling a little different is that a lot of this housing is occurring within built communities, that we're sort of running out of land. So we're seeing a lot of this housing within communities. And the average community in the Wasatch Front area is now 70% developed. Now, I mentioned that this idea of that this is the start of a new normal, a few key considerations on this. One is something that we're very familiar with. We're growing super fast. We're adding about the population of a city of the size of Bountiful every year. We know this, that's not new. It's just a reminder that growth in Utah is as certain as any place in the country, and that's because it's primarily our internal increase. And so as we're thinking about how to deal with this challenge, it is our own children primarily that we're talking about. There's sort of a moral imperative to deal with that. That's point one. Point two of why I think that this is a new normal is that is this interesting comparison of how much supply we're building, these gray bars, decade by decade, versus the growth in households, which are the red bars. And if you just look ahead to the most recent 8 years, you see how much more demand there is than supply. We're kind of underwater. And I think part of the reason why is that we're running out of land. This is a map that shows you these purple pieces, just look within the Wasatch Front. And you have to get down to the west side of Utah County or the southern part of Utah County or up into Box Elder County to find significant pieces of land. This is part of the reason why I think that this is a new normal for us. Land is running out in the Wasatch Front. We think that that might be about 15 years. We'll see a lot of those purple pieces gone. And the third reason why I think that this is part of a new normal is that we're seeing a big demographic shift. Here is 2015, here's 2050. I'm breaking this up into major age categories. Train your eye on young, green, and older age cohorts, blue. Those are driving demand for rental units, townhouses, lower cost forms of housing, downsizing. Right, so these are Wasatch Front numbers, and if you just take 2015, you subtract 2015, in other words, the change, what you see is that most of the housing growth is taking place in downsizing populations or new home buyers. So within our communities, that's what we're gonna feel. We're gonna feel the market want to satisfy predominantly those housing cohorts, those age cohorts. Any questions about that? So a new normal for those reasons, and then I'll just mention briefly that the where question is something very much that's been a part of the conversation of Wasatch Choice 2050, which has these four key strategies that you looked at last time, and I'll just draw your attention to the last one, link economic development with transportation and housing decisions. In other words, how do they coordinate with each other geographically?
And that is very much part of the conversation that we had together in developing the Wasatch Choice 2050. In other words, how does housing relate to the jobs people want to get to the transportation options, to transit, and the like? And with that, those are my two key points I just wanted to seed the conversation with, and I think I took too long. So with that, unless there are questions, I'll hand it back to Commissioner.
Have you observed Morgan County and Floyd County in these studies?
Yes, and they're part of the Wasatch Front, those housing graphics that I put up of the cohort. They're built in that. Land is not an issue for you guys in Tooele.
Not yet.
Land is not an issue in Morgan, and so that land question, I think, is more about the Wasatch Front counties as opposed to the Tooele-Morgan County. So I think that you're going to start to see a lot more housing pressure as that housing supply starts to, or the land supply starts to dwindle in the Weber, Davis, Salt Lake, Utah County areas.
We are the seventh fastest growing county in America.
And I'm not surprised.
And so that's significant for us.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. Okay.
Okay, Mayor. We'll turn it over to Abby.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm Abby. I actually sit on this committee and can hardly come ever, but thanks for having me. I'm with the Salt Lake Chamber, and I'll tell you why in a minute here that we, do I do this or do you do this? Yeah, I do it, okay. Why we launched the Housing Gap Coalition, but essentially, we're the state's largest business association, as you well know, and have about 12,000 business members across the state in all 29 counties. About a year and a half ago, we started hearing from a number of businesses whose employees were struggling to find housing, whether it was that next house, whether it was an entry-level house, whether it was employees being recruited in and, you know, put 15 offers on a house, whatever the case may be. We started hearing about this. We had a conversation with Natalie Gochner at the time, who runs the Kempsey Gardner Institute. She said, let's do a deep dive on this. So we commissioned a study with her, and she coins this as a landmark study. It's really noticing the looms of that affordability crisis. This is, and the study is primarily talking about housing affordability, not affordable housing, so not low-income housing. Although it's a component of the study, it is not the driving force or the focus of the study. And really, to the best of our knowledge, this is the only study of its nature in the country. What it tells us, and Ted already alluded to this, we have more households that had been formed over this last decade than we have household units. So we have a supply and demand problem for the first time really in 40 years. And the reason for this is causing our housing shortage, and it's really a huge component of why prices have increased so rapidly. You can see there the projected increase in households in Utah over time. And it's many reasons. Land is becoming scarce. Labor market is incredibly tight. We have a ton of mega construction projects going on throughout the state, including the airport, that's taking a ton of labor off the market in housing and putting it into that type of construction. The study looks at local policies that have really limited the number of household units that have come on the market. And essentially, it means that the average Utah family is struggling with this gap. You can see here by this graph that we're ranked fourth in the nation in housing prices over the last decade, or excuse me, the last generation. A generation is 26 years, so 1991 to today, and then you'll see the study go out to 2044, which is considered the next generation. And you can see the price increase there. Based on this growth, the value of a home in 1991 of $125,000 is now worth $347,000. Where on the nation, that same price of a home in 1991 is only worth $187,000 today. So you can see we took a big increase, and And we are 20% higher right now than our cohorts around us. Boise, Las Vegas, Phoenix, the ones we compete economically with every day on every deal. This is a huge factor of why we're going to see businesses not choose Utah, and they're going to start choosing our counterparts in other locations. You can see there's two highlighted here, the Provo-Orem metro area and the Salt Lake metro area. You can see the increase of prices over that last generation there specifically. Essentially, what this is telling us is that, you know, we're being priced out. Part of our growth and prosperity is about the quality of life and the affordability that we have, and we can't claim that anymore. And to Ted's point, this is the new normal. There's really, we can't go backwards. One thing we can do is stop the bleeding, but going back and going back to the way it was is really, really going to be very difficult. 1 in 8 Utahns are cost burdened, meaning they pay more than 50% of their annual income on housing. If this trend continues at this rapid rate, 1 in 5 Utahns will actually be cost burdened. You're supposed to pay right around that 30% of your income on housing, and 50% is that mark right here for 1 in 8 Utahns. The Nebo School District, we did an analysis on a first-year teacher. They can afford less than 1% of the homes that are on the market right now. After 10 years of being a teacher, less than 15%. So it's a huge problem for those types of individuals that we want in our communities, we need in our communities. It's a severe problem. What's driving up the cost? Ted already alluded to this, so I'll quickly go through it. You can read it there. And what we're doing about it. Sorry, I keep clicking and a lot of this stuff is redundant, so I will go quick. I don't know what's going on here. We talked about this 4 households to 3 household units. I don't know if we're losing battery or what. Maybe you can just click for me. There you go. There's the cumulative days on the market, less than 15 days. This is actually about 6-month-old data. The average price of a house is on the market right now in Utah County is 6 days. The number of months supply there in vacancy rates, you can see how we're at the lowest that we've ever been in this time frame. This is really hard to read, and my apologies, but the vacancy rates on new apartments in the Wasatch Front, again, if you look across the last 12 years there, the lowest the vacancy rate has ever been. We got a stat about 6 weeks ago. There's an apartment complex in Sugar House that has a 2,500 person waiting list. Construction and labor costs. I mean, we have less construction workers in the market right now than we've had since for the last 10 years. It's a huge driver of what's pushing up the costing. It's construction is, demand is increasing. The average salary of a journeyman plumber right now is $146,000 because they're in such high demand. So if any of your children want to go into a good high-paying career, that would be, plumbing would be one of them right now. Our demographics are changing. Certainly immigration laws fall right into a factor of this. You can see the increase in costs on materials here. You can see the impact and impact fees and permit fees have increased over the last 10 years. So local zoning ordinances and NIMBYism, and everybody probably in here knows what NIMBYism is, but that's not in my backyard. I understand population growth is coming. Let's find a different place than in my community to put them. Sorry, I don't know what's happening there. So zoning ordinance determine density, the housing types, the construction and material costs. No, you've never heard that, Mayor, have you? As well as regulatory requirements. There needs to be a balance of housing types is what we're seeing to make sure that people aren't priced out and to make sure that you know we accommodate all types of incomes. Cities must continue to implement smarter growth policies, and we've talked about this in what we were presented with prior to this presentation, to ensure that residents can afford the quality of life and what they want to enjoy. And local opposition is alive and well. It is everywhere. And I'm going to talk about here in a minute what we're actually doing about it. You can see land costs. We've already covered most of that. We're running out of land, and the land that's left is not the most developable. It's very expensive. You can see our population growth. We're the top 10, or we are the top of the top 10 states in the nation for population growth, as well as job growth over the last 7 years. So what the report shows us, this is the conservative number. If we continue to develop and grow in the way we are currently, if we continue to not address the concerns that I put up here, in the next generation, 2044, we will be equivalent to today's San Francisco prices. This is the conservative number. The report actually shows on the trajectory that we're on, it's going to be about $1.2 million will be the average price of a home in the Wasatch Front. So if any of us believe that our kids and grandkids are not going to be living in our basement or going to Boise or LA or Los Angeles or wherever else, we're crazy. We've got to stop the bleeding. We've got to work together. We've got to figure out how we can solve this issue. So what now? We launched the Housing Gap Coalition in response to the study. Steve Starks, who's the president and chairman of the Larry H. Miller Corporation, is our chair. Clint Betts with Silicon Slopes is our co-chair. We have a number of broad-based businesses on that. We meet quite regularly with those groups. And we talk about how we can actually proactively address this issue. Bryn, who's back there, I'm going to a few of them, but Bryn has been going to, she's been to 14, 15 cities so far, including Salt Lake County. She will visit 87 cities before the end of the year, present this high level data to city councils, and then try to make them aware. We've been to a number of yours, Mayor. As you remember, we were at your in Kaysville a couple weeks ago, and to talk about, you know, really what the cities can do to start addressing this problem. One thing, possible solutions, and you talked about it here before, is the TLC program. We are going to launch a Build to Success. So everyone's probably familiar with Keys to Success, Code to Success. It's through the GARF Foundation. This is going to get into the high schools to help them understand how important it is and how really lucrative right now these careers in the labor industry are. We are also going to launch a public awareness campaign. So right now we're in contract with Y2 Analytics. We have a lot of partners, including the county and WFRC and the League of Cities and Towns, who are doing in-depth interviews with both the NIMBYs and the YIMBYs, so the yes in my backyard and the not in my backyard, and the people who really don't care. Because you all know as when you get to a city council meeting, the people that just don't have an opinion don't show up at your meetings. It's the one that definitely do have an opinion is the ones you hear from. So we will launch a general awareness campaign after the research data is done to get into the hearts and minds of what these individuals are feeling to try to make them more aware of the issue that we're facing here. We're visiting, as I said, every city across the Wasatch Front. We're talking about, you know, looking at your general plan, looking at the overview. Let me give you this statistic. If I'm a business in your city and I put up the wrong sign, what do you do? You probably give me a warning and then I get fined. If you as cities don't update your general plan or don't have a moderate income plan or don't look at your zoning ordinances or don't on a regular basis, there is no penalty. So we are asking you to please make sure that you're aware of what's going on in your community and you're constantly updating. Look at your general plan, look at your moderate income housing plan, do a zoning overview. We are asking every community to sign a resolution that acknowledges that this is a problem and then work together on trying to address it. That's where we go to questions, right, Ted?
So I want to take Chair's prerogative for a moment here. No, that's okay, thank you. I think, first of all, I'm shocked and wondering where my kids are going to live, and you know, don't know what we do about that. Ready to maybe put up the bunk beds in the basement for the grandkids and when they come. I think this is clearly a topic that is going to consume a lot of time over the next several years for this for us. We are late in the agenda, so what I'd like to propose is maybe, I have a lot of questions. I think we have a lengthy conversation. Maybe we defer that and put this on the next agenda item, agenda for the next meeting to continue this conversation, because I don't know that we can do it justice in the next few minutes we have left.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's okay.
Absolutely, and we will, at that point, have visited many more of you, so we'll get into the conversations with the city councils at that point as well.
Great.
So happy to do it, Mayor.
Yeah.
Mayor, is it a possibility we can get an electronic copy of this?
Yeah, Ted has it, so
we can look at it.
You can absolutely send it around.
Yeah, we'll send it out as part of the minutes.
Commissioner, there's actually the study's online, so we can send a link to Ted and he can send that out as well. The study's, it's pretty remarkable. It'll probably leave you up not sleeping at night after reading it, but.
I'm not sure I like that.
Yes.
You mentioned that you're going out to different city councils and county councils and all that presenting this. In Morgan County, we're the poster child for Not in My Backyard. So it would probably be good to probably get on the county council and go over this, because some of this is staggering. As the commissioner from Tooele says, it's all coming our way.
Yeah, so no, it sure is. And how you grow and develop is so key.
Well, we just did a study in Mountain Green area. The average home over there is $210 a square foot.
Mm-hmm.
That's just ridiculous. I mean, you're talking $800 to $1 million. And so there is no moderate income housing. So I would applaud you going to areas like ours and Tooele.
We're on the agenda, both the county and the city in Tooele, and we'll make sure we get on the Morgan agenda as well.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Having this on a future agenda.
Okay, perfect.
We have one last item on the agenda that we have to get done today, and that's Jory's going to present a proposed amendment number 6 to the current 2015 to 2040 regional transportation plan. We heard about this first in our May meeting, and today we're being asked to make a recommendation to approve this to the full council. So Jory?
Yep. And I'm going to start my plumbing apprenticeship apparently after this meeting, so I can work on that, right, Abby? No.
You'll be in high demand, George.
Yeah, I know. So we do regional transportation plans on a 4-year cycle. Periodically, we need to update those. As we look to update them, we have to look, make sure we're conforming to air quality, we're meeting financial constraints, we're abiding by the public process and getting public comments. Part of the process is we bring this to the Regional Growth Committee. I'm not going to go into detail, but as the mayor mentioned, we did bring this to May. We went out to public comment. We went out to the Weber COG and the Salt Lake COGs with these projects for review. And now we're back to you to go to the Regional Council next week. So we have 6 projects that are being requested to be amended in the 2015 to 2040 Regional Transportation Plan. So just for a little clarification, this is the adopted regional transportation plan that we all use, that Ben uses when he looks if you have a project in the plan. We're working on the 2019 to 2050 plan, so that's the difference. And by next May, the 2019 plan will be the adopted plan that we'll all use for our long-range planning. So first project's I-15. It's a UDOT project. This is a northbound lane from about Bangor to 215. The state has funding. It was a TIF project, and they're doing an environmental study right now, and they think they can add an additional northbound lane with the existing funding that's been appropriated to this project at about $135 million. It also includes the CD and other kind of connector distributor roads along with it. So that's the first project. It's a level 3 request, which means it needs to conform to air quality. Principal arterials and regionally significant roads and transit projects need to, of the level 3, need to have air quality. Second project is in West Valley and Kearns. It's 4700 South. This is a kind of a joint project, but it's in the current plan in phase 2. They're requesting to move it up to phase 1. and also then to submit for the SDP project funds for this project. It's about $15 million. It's a widening project from 3 to 5 lanes. Third project down in Bluffdale, 146 South. This is a rescoping of the project. In the current plan, we have this piece right here on the east side as a widening project. They've looked at this project and want to actually not widen this section. They want to do operational improvements, including bike lanes, shoulders, curb gutter, kind of finish the road, and then realign the connection to Redwood on the very west side on 146. So rescoping of the project. Was an unfunded piece, and now they're asking for it to be put into phase one so they can move forward with all those components. $6 million project, roughly. Fourth project, 700 South. This is from a request from Salt Lake City. A new project to the plan also. They would like to have an overpass on 700 South and the railroad bridge just north of the intermodal terminal here, kind of in the northwest quadrant in inland port area. And then also realign 700 South. You can see how it kind of ties here on this side. They want to realign 700 South so it's one intersection here. And then also they have a project here the state does on 5600 West over the railroad crossing that would allow better distance from that bridge over the railroad crossing. So that's about a $21 million request. Project would be about $21 million, and that would allow them to pursue, you know, coordinating with UP, using some of their own money, applying for Salt Lake County money or our SDP funds. So again, the game is get it in phase one, then they can pursue some of these funding sources, and it's one of their top priorities. Now I'm having Abby problems. Yeah. Fifth project up in Hooper. Not Hooper, right? If you're not from, if you don't know Weber County. Hooper, it's on 5500 West from 3500 South to 5500 South. It's an operational type project. So a lot of the roads in the rural part of the county are just two lane roads. This would add curb gutter, sidewalk, shoulders to this section at about $4 million. And they need to have this project in phase one so they can apply for the Weber County third quarter funding source. One more, Heather. Oh, there we go. The last one up here in Plain City, 2800 North, North Plain City Road, very similar to the project in Hooper, where it's curb gutter, sidewalk. They would do some real reconfiguration of some of these corners. And it's a coordinated project they're working on with Far West. And they're also looking at getting the functional classification of this road changed. And they've been working with Wayne in our office to get that done. About $7 million. So we presented the list of technical considerations. So as we review amendments to the plan, we review technical considerations that line up with the 10 regional goals that this committee passed in 2016 in October. And so this is just a high-level overview of some of those. We look at safety, does it connect to centers, how does it affect access to opportunity, does it impact a vulnerable community, does it require equality? These are for the level three requests, and we cover these in a little bit more detail in May. The level two, since they're a little bit not regionally significant, we have less of the goals that we're reviewing the projects against. But again, safety, amount of VHT, connectivity, is the project ready to be moved into phase one? Does it support the Wasatch Choice 2050 Center? So with that, again, I made mention that we went out to the two COGs. We've had the public comment period where we received zero comments on these projects. So everything seemed to be okay there. And now we're at the Regional Growth Committee asking to go to Regional Council. So I believe there's motion language in the packet if anybody's willing to.
So I would entertain a motion. There's specific language or just motion. I'd entertain a motion, if you have it there, but recommend that Wasatch Front Regional Council approve amendment number 6 to the 2015 to 2040 RTP in the air quality conformity determination is found in the draft air quality memorandum 38.
So moved.
Moved and seconded, or is there a comment? Okay. Any discussion to the motion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, the motion passes. Lastly, and I know we are out of time, just a time for any other business, I do have one item that I'd like to highlight, and if anyone else Salt Lake County is hosting an event on, it's called The Hidden Cost of Free Parking. It's Professor Donald Shoup, the nation's expert on parking policy, is coming to town. He's going to discuss how to accommodate parking in ways that maximize community benefits. I would also flag, this also generally is going to be an interesting conversation. We encourage you to attend, love to see you there. And also, we'll dovetail into a conversation we're having, it's internal to Salt Lake County, about parking throughout the county. And the legislature in the last session appropriated some funding that Salt Lake County will be using to create a parking revolving loan fund to help to encourage some of our smart development, transit-oriented development. We would love to, following this, get your feedback, those of you in Salt Lake County, feedback and input on that parking revolving loan fund. It's not a lot of money, but we're kind of internally thinking through that right now and hope to maybe grow it as we look to promote some smart growth alternatives throughout the county. So, any other business?
There's e-bike to this sent to us that we could forward to our councils or city managers.
Send this out electronically?
Yes, we can, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Send it to you.
Okay. All right, anything else? All right, with that, I entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.
Take care.